Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Sea Change Podcast. I am your host, Jenna Valente, and this is your go-to show to meet the most interesting and inspiring people living, working, and recreating along the American shorelines. And if you're listening to this today, congratulations, you've made it to December. We are close to having another year under our belt, and 2023 sure has been a doozy, hasn't it? It kind of feels like the year of the shakeup, like almost like we're living in a snow globe. Like things are very much in transition and up in the air, and we're all just doing what we can until we see how and when and where everything settles. And despite how unsettling transitions can be, they also are moments of great opportunity and reflection. So I hope that we are all seizing this moment to reflect on how far we've come, how we're feeling in the present, and setting our sights on what we as change makers can do next to make progress and continue being positive influences in the world. And speaking of positive influences, my guest today is someone who, when I think about her, fits squarely in that category. She is someone I deeply admire and is someone who energizes and inspires me to show up as the best version of myself every day. And I am so excited for you all to meet her. Casey Darling Niffen is, among many things, an environmental advocate and advocacy coordinator for Florida Oceanographic Society. And it is my pleasure to introduce her to you all today. Casey, welcome to the show. Thank you for joining me.
Thank you so much for inviting me, Jenna. It is so wonderful to be here. I love the show and I am a longtime listener. So it is great to be here.
I wish you could see the smile on my face. It's like massive right now. It's so nice to hear that. So you know then from having listened to my show that I like to start off most of the episodes by exploring our connection to nature. And I feel like I could just listen to people talk all day long about their experiences outdoors. I think that there's so much connection there and beauty there. And like, it's like any sort of life moment that we're going through, sometimes it almost feels like the answer is always just like, go spend time outside. Like, it's such a great place to process and just live. I like feel like I wanted to say like live, man, like making me sound like Matthew McConaughey, but not to get like too off track here as I ramble. My question for you is, I'm wondering if you have like favorite ways to connect with nature or spend time outside.
I love this question and I couldn't agree more that it's so important. I now wish that my favorite part of being in nature was like playing the bongos because of the Matthew McConaughey reference, but it's not. It's
2024.
That's true. I'm not a musician, but I could spend probably a whole episode talking to you about all of the ways that I enjoy spending time in nature. And it is definitely what brings me back to why I do this work every time. So I live in South Florida and I am so fortunate to live close to the water and be able to recreate on the water when I'm able to. So one of my favorite things is to paddleboard. And I have two kids and a husband that also love being on the water because they have to, because they're in a family with me. And so we have a whole flotilla of couple paddleboards, a couple of kayaks, a canoe. I like to say that we are all self-propelled floating devices, floating all of our boats are self-propelled. So we get out there and we love to paddle. And then we also love to hike if you can call it that in Florida, and we do, but we love to just get outside and walk around in the woods and smell the trees, just enjoying it. And then, when we can, we like to go explore other places. And I love, I found that both the ocean and like mountain landscapes, I just love the expanse when you look out and just everything you see is green or yellow or even brown, but with that beautiful landscape of wilderness around you. I just love that moment where you can take that all in. So that's my rambling answer to how I enjoy it. I enjoy it in all ways, pretty much.
Yeah, it's very humbling in so many different ways. Like when you are, you know, in a place that's feels like it's so much larger than you. And then this is reminding me of, I like saw a cartoon on one of the social media platforms like forever ago that for some reason just like stuck in my mind, but it's like these two people and they're like looking up at the night sky and they're talking about how small they feel. And then they're like, oh, okay. But then flip over. And they were like looking down in the grass and seeing all the bugs and everything that's way smaller than them. And it's just I just feel like being outside and like giving ourselves the space to observe like that and like see how we fit into the landscape and the ecosystem is truly just extraordinary. And like, I was also kind of giggling to myself when you were talking about hiking, because you had me flashing back to when I lived and worked on a wildlife refuge in Virginia. And I came down from Maine, which like, I know if you're listening to this and you're in the American West and you're used to these like huge mountains, you're probably gonna laugh at me, but like, you know, New England has mountains. And one of my friends asked if I wanted to go hiking. And I was like, yes, finally, like, let's get some elevation. And we just ended up doing like, it was like a really long walk. And I was like, what is this? This isn't hiking. But like over time, I developed this like different perspective on it. And like, it doesn't need to have that elevation. It's just about taking a moment to spend some time outside. So
absolutely.
I appreciate the nod to that.
Florida hiking is very much just walking around outside, but sometimes you get your feet wet. Sometimes you're what we call swamp tromping. Sometimes you're in sand, which is a different kind of hard, you know, versus elevation, but it's also just a beautiful moment of being immersed outside. And I think that's what it comes down to.
Yeah, that's really what it's all about. And so I know that you were born and raised and still live in South Florida. I'm wondering if there are any places around you that are particularly special to you. And I always like to add this little caveat of like, if you have like a secret spot, you don't have to give it up. But like, are there places that you really enjoy visiting in the region that you live in?
Yeah. You know, the reason I got into all this again was because I had all of this beautiful water to recreate around. So the portion of South Florida I'm in, we are lucky enough to get clear water. And so I grew up diving, and being underwater is just, it's a magical experience. It's like nothing else. And I haven't done it in many years because of life, but I still snorkel a lot. And I think anytime I can get underwater, and really it doesn't matter where, I do prefer clear water. So that's, you know, that does limit my where, but anytime I can get underwater, it really just, it's just magical. I don't know how, it's like a meditative experience for me. I don't know how else to explain it, but that would be my favorite. And bringing that love and joy for being underwater to my kids and allowing them to see what that's like, that's been a really cool experience for me too. I feel like that, you know, you, especially when you've been doing something for so long, the other folks that like to do those things like hiking or like diving, you know, unless you see something really incredible, no one gets like really excited. But if you go out with a kid and you show them like a sea snail or something, they're like, their minds are blown. They've never seen it before. And it's that wonder and that magic that comes alive in them. So I love that. And I love all of the places that we get to explore here.
Yeah, I feel like experiencing nature through the eyes of children awakens your own inner child and like reminds you of like the magic and the wonder that exists in the world that we've grown so desensitized to as we get older and we like see these things all the time. Like I don't currently have children, but a lot of my like cousins that I'm really close to and friends, they're at the age where they're starting to have kids. And it's so fun just to like do exactly what you were talking about, Casey. Like just really, I mean, experience like anything, but like especially being outside and like seeing someone light up at something that I think, you know, we are maybe we're just like, oh yeah, it's another snail or it's a grasshopper or like cool sunset or the weather's doing something that I've seen like thousands of times through the eyes of someone that it's like brand new and fresh for is really nice. And just so special to be like alongside of a small human as they're gaining these experiences.
Yeah, 100%. And I also will say like, it's just given me the like permission to be silly and dorky and geek out about everything that I want to. And I love that about it too. And I don't think you have to have kids, but if you can get in touch with that side, like even when just me and my partner go hiking now, I'll be like, oh my gosh, look, it's whatever. And he's excited to see it. And so I feel like we bring that has like, we've brought that through even to when our kids aren't around. And it's just really special. It's, I think maybe that's just part of getting older and losing that facade of like needing to be cool too.
Oh, I know. I'm really glad that I'm past that phase. I feel like I don't know if I've really had that, but like, I guess my 20s, I probably would have cared more about like what people think of me or how I'm perceived. And I feel like now I'm in my 30s and I'm just every day, I feel like I care less and less about that. And as that happens, my joy and like confidence are just like skyrocketing. Where I'm like, oh, I'm just going to do what I want to do and like be happy and do what makes me happy and be excited by all the little things that are around me all the time. Even if people think that I'm a nerd, it's fine.
Yeah, I think we have to hold on to those things, especially in times like these. I think that's the only way to, you know, find the joy. And I will say, you know, my background's in marine biology and some of that, it's not necessarily like being cool, but if you grow up in Florida and then you go and do marine biology, like you are not allowed to be excited about a sea turtle or a dolphin or a manatee. It's like somewhere in the written rules that you're not allowed to be excited about those things. And I didn't know that at first. And then I was like, oh, okay, I should remember, don't get excited. And now I'm like, you know what? I can get excited about anything I want to at any moment.
Yes. And
I like to tell like younger people that too, that are maybe looking to be a scientist. I'm like, you can still get so excited about your favorite bug, even if you are studying to get your PhD in that bug or, you know, whatever.
Totally. And, you know, I think over time I've realized that the things and like pieces of myself that maybe were different and maybe I tried to mute when I was younger are now the things that make me cool and special and like interesting as an adult. So like for folks that are listening to this, if you're like very excitable about nature or like something that's really niche, but you're like keeping it on the down low because you're afraid that someone might like make fun of you or it's not like the trendier, like cool thing to do. Well, guess what? Eventually you're going to grow up and you're going to get sick of being like the same as everybody else. So just like lean into it now, like explore all of those things, let your inner child out. And like, life is too short to conform.
Absolutely. That's my if you're going to take any for the day. Do that.
So I feel like, you know, the state of Florida, obviously, like anyone that's been there or looked at a map, like it just feels like Florida and the ocean are so deeply connected that it's hard to separate them. Like, do you feel like the ocean has been this like centerpiece of your life or the culture in Florida? Like, I guess what I'm trying to get at is, like, what do you love most about it? Like, what speaks to you most about the ocean? Why are you called to it? Like, it's sort of just very open-ended question, but I feel like it's on me to ask you that as somebody that's, like, had this unique experience of being born and raised in a state that is, like, literally surrounded by the ocean on all sides.
Yeah, it's definitely a part of my sense of place here. And again, I'll say it again, you know, South Florida is different than North Florida, which is different than Central Florida, and even East Coast, West Coast. And I know every state has that, but I am just biased. So I'm going to say Florida really does. But, you know, every day, the ocean and the land in Florida gets a little closer together, and they are becoming more one. I see that as I drive by docks and they're covered by king tides. And you know, it's central to my life here. It is what brought me back after leaving the state for a few years. And other than family, but you know, I almost consider that part of my family because it was such a big part of my upbringing. We were out on the water all the time. We went to the beach. That was one of my favorite things to do as a kid. And of course, diving was really central to my life and my life's work. I wanted to be an underwater photographer. And I thought that's what I was going to do with my life, you know, at the ripe old age of 17 or so. And this is funny. My dad told me, he was like, I think maybe that's like a great hobby, but you need to, when you go to college, you need to like pick something that you can get a career in. And I laughed when we were snorkeling together a couple of years ago, because I was like, Dad, did you know that there's people now and they make like lots of money just by posting photographs underwater on the internet?
Yeah, and he was like hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Exactly. And I was like, the environmental space, while I love it, is, you know, it's not always the most lucrative. So that advice was, I know, well-meaning from my dad, who's a very analytical engineer. I know he was looking at it from the facts at the time, but just a little, you know, a little reminder that times change and things evolve. So I don't know what my life would look like had I followed that path, but it was definitely central to how I got to this path, and I'm so thankful for that. So,
you know, I feel ocean, like you're still young enough. You could pick up a camera as long as, I mean, the thing with underwater photography in general, it's an expensive, I was going to say hobby, but I know for some it's more than that. Like myself, it's like become way more than a hobby. It just keeps growing and growing and growing. But then you're like, oh crap, it's so expensive. So like at some point, but at least with like the underwater stuff, there is like so much opportunity there for it to pay off. But
yeah,
all I was, and when I was like, you could start today.
I think so. And back in those days, it was film. Do you know how many film photos you need to take to get a good underwater shot? It is a lot. So it's actually maybe a little bit easier now in the digital age. Oh, totally,
because you could go down there and take like thousands of photos and have it on like auto setting if you didn't know what you're doing. And you'd get a great photo. But like, yeah, the like old school underwater photographers are unbelievably talented. To go down there in those conditions and get like the lighting right and do it with film is mind-blowing to me.
Yep, it's bananas. So I know, like, as I do, I've taken this on a tangent, but the ocean has been really central to my life, and it is always where I go when I'm feeling a little bit like I need some direction, or I just need like my brain to calm down a little bit. And have that, again, be reminded of that expanse. And anything that seems really big at the time tends to fade a little bit. I don't know if it's the noise or the visual or both, probably. But
Yeah. Well, you're in like good company when you talk about going down like side paths and tangents, because that's, I feel like, all I do on this show. We always bring it back. But like when you were talking about like, you're like getting at like the healing power of the ocean, and something that came up for me that I started doing last winter, and I have yet to do it yet, like as it's gotten colder, is I have a friend who is training to be a therapist, but she's also like a Reiki master. And she got me into doing cold plunges with her. And the reason I brought that up is because, I mean, one, it's a really, it's like something I never thought I would really do, because it is like, it's a very uncomfortable thing. But the reason she has us doing it is she's like, all right, well, once you start like getting into the water, start to notice like what emotions are coming up for you. And it serves as this like flag and indicator for things that maybe you need to like address in your out of the cold ocean life. And it's been like incredibly fascinating. And I feel like I just want to mention that for listeners also, like, no, you don't need to be Maine and like cold plunging. You can find cold water in a lot of places still in wintertime. You could even do it in like a cold shower. Like if you're interested in some of that, like healing benefits of water, like really tap into how you're feeling, in those moments of like discomfort when you're cold plunging, or like, I mean, you could do it in really any uncomfortable situation, but I've found that very fascinating.
I'm laughing over here because my comfort level with that, just even you talking about it, I'm noticing my discomfort. As soon as you started going that path, I was like, don't say go in cold water. Don't say go in cold water. I hate cold water. I have a lot of healing, Jenna.
Yeah, maybe come visit me in Maine. We'll do some healing.
I live in Florida, and when the water gets below 80 degrees Fahrenheit, I do not like to go in. And I know. And that is like, I'm not exaggerating. I'm not like, I get physically angry when the water is cold.
Oh my God. Yeah.
So I think maybe that's, you know, what I need to, I did say this last winter as well. And again, winter in quotes in Florida, but it's all what you're used to. And I said, I'm going to take this time to like still get in the water this winter, because I know it always makes me feel better. I know that like I miss it come March when I haven't been in the water in a long time. And I did not do that last winter. And so maybe this is the one. But
well, it sounds like you could probably come visit me in the summertime in Maine and still have that cold plunge experience in our summer ocean, because I don't know if the water really ever gets up to that high temperature.
Then I will say, on the flip side, if you get to be in very hot water in Florida, you know, it's also maybe not as hot as it got this summer. This summer was like hot tub, and that's not fun if you're recreating in the water. But I will say, when it kind of feels just like a big warm hug when you jump in the ocean, I do love that. So
that sounds really nice. I'm speaking of warming waters. I imagine this might be one of the responses to this question I'm about to ask. What are some of the environmental challenges that you're seeing? And this could either be like in where you live around you, or the whole state or region in general.
Yeah. So, I mean, I can't not think about the temperatures that Florida experienced over the summer. Like getting to 101 degrees down in the Florida Keys was just, I wasn't there personally, but hearing of other scientists and divers and folks that work on coral restoration, just like sobbing through their dives because of what they were seeing, I had a real visceral response to that. And it was not, you know, it was not pretty. It's not pretty. And I think it's getting really real here. And I think that people are seeing that and they are experiencing it firsthand. And I hope that that drives some action and some change. But yeah, the warming temperatures in the ocean, especially in the Florida Keys, were hard to ignore for anybody this summer. And then here, we actually had like a decent summer. Sometimes we experience really bad algae blooms, and I know that can happen in other places too. And we did not have that this summer, so that's something to be thankful for. Where I am specifically, but yeah, as a, you know, as a lifelong diver and snorkeler, I was pretty distraught to see that some of those reefs that really inspired me when I was a kid could be, you know, not there for my kids to experience. So.
Yeah. And, you know, as we're talking about some of the challenges that Florida's climate is facing, it makes me wonder, and this is another question that I feel like I ask a lot of people because I love to hear everybody's take on it, but what does a healthy ocean mean to you? And like, what does that look like? And that can also be like in Florida's waters or beyond, because it's obviously, you know, it's all connected.
Yeah. I always think about this from an ecosystems perspective. At least I start there, right? Like a healthy ocean, when I visualize it in my mind, it is chock full of creatures and critters and fish and healthy seagrass, healthy coral. And then that obviously provides habitat for all of our marine species that live there. It's, I guess what I think of is a home for those parts of the marine ecosystem, and a healthy home means safety. It means consistency. It means that you don't have these massive fluctuations that you're not used to and you can't deal with. And then the other part of it is, I think we need to have a healthy connection with the ocean. And in order to have that, there has to be access. There has to be opportunities to be in that environment that feels safe and that feels supported. So as I, you know, the future that I envision for myself and Floridians down the road is that, you know, I want that to be a thriving ecosystem, not one that we are having to pull back from the, you know, brink of crisis every single summer.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm wondering, and I feel like you've called out a few things in our conversation so far, but I'm curious to hear more about just your path a little bit. Like, what were those major influences for you to pursue a career in the climate and ocean conservation space, and kind of like, how did you get to where you are now?
Yeah, the long and winding road.
insert Beatles song that we can't play because I don't want to get sued.
For licensing.
Like, play purposes. It in your mind.
Yes, you all hear it. Yeah, I was actually just talking to somebody about this today, a young person that's interested in advocacy. And honestly, when I was a young person, younger person, not that I'm super old, but I didn't even think of this as a career path for me. Again, I wanted to be in the water. I wanted to be taking pictures because that would just allow me to be in the water all the time. And then I pursued a degree in biology and actually thought that I wanted at that point to do lab research and do like biomedical research. And that led me to my master's degree. And I did that in marine biology because I thought that I would have this, at the time I thought I would go on and I would get my PhD in this program called Marine Biomedical and Environmental Studies. It was like my dream combination of all the things I loved, like lab research and medical research and all of the intersection of these things, right? And then like best laid plans, I decided somewhere along the line in my master's that, that maybe I would rethink that. And then I had my daughter, and that really changed everything. I started to think about the fact that I had brought this person into the world, and I really wanted to make sure that the world I brought her into was safe and consistent and in a healthy place to live. And that, coupled with like severe anxiety about the future, led me on this path of advocacy. No, but really, I think sometimes when you start to think about, oh man, there's like these big problems, for me, the best way to tackle that is to be involved and to learn as much as I can and to like be on a path of action. And it's really helped me so much with turning that kind of fear and anxiety of what the future could look like. And not that I don't have that still, but I at least feel like I am trying to do something, right? Like I am trying with my skill set and everything that I can do in my little life to make a better future.
Yeah, right. And that's what it's all about. Like speaking as a fellow anxiety prone human, I feel like my path was like in kind of like a similar way in terms of the way that I feel like I processed my anxiety about the future into a sense of purpose and feeling like, okay, I could just sit by and be like having panic attacks all the time and be depressed and upset, and or like I can try to do what I have the power to do in the community around me, and that gives me some sense of relief. And I also think you're like spot on with learning like as much as you possibly can about the issues, because it's like even though they might still give you anxiety, I think at least for me, like if I have a deeper understanding of how something works, it helps me like lower my stress levels about it, because then I think that there's just – I think it is. It's like the fear of the unknown. And once you sort of name it, give it a face, get to know it a little bit better – it might still be like a stressful thing, but you might have some thoughts on like how to approach it or things that you can do to take action to try to, you know, mitigate something like the climate crisis or like leave a better future for your children.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm reminded of this time when I was a kid, actually. I still to this day, and this is going to be funny because I live in Florida by choice, I am not a fan of hurricanes, turns out. And I never have been. And even as a kid, I was like terrified of hurricanes. Andrew came through south of where I lived, but it was still like a really big deal. And I was 5, and I still remember that like really vividly. Hurricane Andrew, that is, for, you know, our national listeners.
It's just a guy named Andrew.
Yeah, like Big Bad Andrew came, but Hurricane Andrew was like, if you're talking to a Floridian, like they know exactly
what you're talking about. I think so, even a lot of people outside of, like a lot of people.
I think so, yeah. So hopefully that wasn't lost, but just in case. And after that, I remember in school doing like a report on hurricanes, and I was like, I just need to learn everything there is to know about this, because if I do, then maybe I can figure out how to shift its path, or not really, but
that would be incredible.
Well, don't tell the geoengineering conspiracy folks that. I did not say that on a recorded podcast. But I literally had, and my mom will tell this story, I had, this was, you know, like when the internet was just, you know, in its early days where you didn't, like, you couldn't pull up a map and see the path. And I had like a lat long piece of paper in our hurricane closet that we would like go and hide in. And I would track it with the lat long and have all these little dots. And it was in there for like, I don't know, maybe 20 years.
What? So I love
she probably
that.
Has it still somewhere. Yeah.
Also, yeah. having a healthy fear of hurricanes, I think, is a very reasonable fear to have.
You would think.
Yeah. You remind it. So, like, you know, I grew up in a lot of places that we had really powerful storms that are scary in different ways. But, like, hurricanes are something that I don't have a lot of experience with. And so when I was living on the wildlife refuge in Virginia, that's when Hurricane Sandy came through. And for a long time, the path of that storm was going to go right over Chincoteague Island. And my just naive self and one other, my coworker who was from New York, so we had similar mindsets, we were like, oh yeah, we're going to be fine. Like, we'll just get batteries and fill the tub with water and, like, you know, get beer and not leave. Like, we're going to stick it out. And so, like, everybody was leaving. We were coming up on the point where, like, there's a causeway where you can leave the island. And, like, there was going to be a point where you could no longer leave because the water was going to be over it. And the refuge manager ended up, like, coming over to our bunkhouse and was like, get out of here now. Like, your life is on my hands. And, like, made us leave and go stay with some friends. And we ended up being there for 2 weeks because, like, the island just got pummeled. And the hurricane, like, it turned, and as everybody knows, it, like, ended up hitting New York, New Jersey. But it's just, like I like to share that for folks that maybe you don't have a hurricane experience. But, like, having a healthy respect and fear of hurricanes is so reasonable because, I mean, like, I almost learned the hard way what happens when you don't respect them.
Yeah, and that's – I mean, I think that can be so true if you've never experienced it or you are not really familiar with what can happen. It can be really easy to be like, ah, that's fine. It's just some wind. But they always say, like a saying here in Florida is, you know, you hide from wind and you run from water. Mm-hmm. And that is something that I definitely ascribe to. And if there's a, you know, a three, category three or above, I'm not sticking around for it. But Sandy, Hurricane Sandy actually came through on my wedding day.
Oh, no.
So, and it, like, skirted the coast of Florida. And so we, and of course we had, like, our stuff by the water, as, you know, as it's a big part of our life. And so our family and friends were coming in and it was like tropical storm force winds. I'm like, welcome to Florida. Here we are. So
yeah. It was a memorable one. Like,
yeah, there were, like, planks put down as I was walking down the aisle because the water was, like, coming up. It was a full moon, too. And so it was just, like, funny. I'm like, this is, like, a cool visual, I feel like, walking the plank. And I don't know. There's some metaphors in here. I don't know where they are. But yeah, but it was a memorable experience for sure. And I know that really opened the eyes of a lot of people in the Northeast who had never had to experience that, including some of my family members that went back up there and were, you know, had some issues. So hurricane safety is important for everybody along the Eastern Seaboard now, for sure.
Yes, PSA, you heard it here.
PSA,
first. Well, probably not first, but you heard it here today. So I'd like to pivot now to talk about your work a little bit more. Will you tell me more about your role with the Florida Oceanographic Society and what you do there?
Yeah. So Florida Oceanographic Society has been around here in Stuart, Florida for a really long time. They've got this beautiful visitor center, almost like a nature center. So you can come and you can see animals and you can interact with stingrays and really feel, like we've talked about, immersed in that environment in a safe way and also learn about it. So we have a whole education department and they tell people about our coastal ecosystems. And then we have a research department and they work on different methods to restore the waterways and to plant seagrass and to restore oyster beds, which are really important to our estuary here. We are along the Indian River Lagoon, once the most biodiverse estuary in North America, our claim to fame. But it's really suffered in the past several years, and we've lost a lot of habitat. So I am in the advocacy arm. So we do education, research, and advocacy. And my part, I kind of see it as like, we have to advocate for clean water. We have to make sure that our community knows that this is important, because that will allow for us to do the restoration work. And then the education department really spreads that message to all of our visitors. So there's really a lot of like interaction among all of the departments, and it's a wonderful place to be and a wonderful place to visit if you're ever in the Treasure Coast area of Florida. I absolutely recommend. We also have this awesome boardwalk that I love that takes you under the mangroves and out to the Indian River Lagoon. So nature trails are, of course, my favorite. So I've really loved my time at Florida Oceanographic, and I've learned a ton as well. And Jenna, I know this is going to be kind of news to you, but I will be moving on for that from Florida Oceanographic and from my role there, but continuing in the conservation space in Florida. So, so my next kind of leg of this journey, you asked about my road to get here, and it's been long and winding, and it continues to be, but I'm going to be moving on to a new role as the conservation policy director for another Florida nonprofit called the Florida Wildlife Federation. So
what?
Yeah.
It's like confetti blowing everywhere.
Yes. Thank you. Yes, it's very exciting. I kind of think of some of the work that I've done has been like very local in this water body that I'm familiar with. And I'm so excited to learn about how we can, preserve and protect much more of Florida, because there's many, many diverse ecosystems that need protecting here. And it's kind of cool, because I was thinking about this before I came to speak with you. I am a very proud graduate of the Healthy Ocean Advocacy Academy. And while we were working on that, we were talking a lot about 30 by 30, the America the Beautiful initiative to protect 30% of all land and water by 2030. Is that right?
I didn't blank on it. You knew it.
Okay. So, and now I'm like, whoa, I get to, in Florida, I get to work on that. So that's really exciting.
It's wild. Like the synchronicities sometimes that like happen in our lives are just mind blowing. Like the fact that you were in this academy learning about 30 by 30 and like the America the Beautiful initiative, and like next thing you know, you're like taking a role where you're like actively involved in like implementing this work. That's amazing.
Yeah, I love it. I love those circulars. I love those feedback loops. So it makes me really happy. And, something as an ocean advocate, longtime ocean advocate, and something that people don't always realize is that protecting, especially in Florida, like you talked about, there's water on every side, right? Protecting land and having conservation land is huge in Florida in terms of then having good water quality downstream. So anything that happens on the land ends up in the water and ends up impacting the water quality and then habitat quality, right? We all know that those two things go hand in hand.
Yes, it's all connected. And I love that you said that, because I feel like I'm like on repeat. I feel like I'm always saying that. It's all interconnected. It's a bunch of interconnected systems.
I feel like the meme where like the person has all the strings and they're like, I think it's the guy from Always, It's Always Sunny. I know what I'm talking about. Like that's always me in the room.
So if someone's listening to this and wants to follow up with you or connect with you, is there a good way that you would recommend somebody doing that?
Yeah, definitely. I'm on all of the platform. So you can just look up my name, Casey Darling Niffen, and connect with me that way. I'm sure my email's on the interwebs as well, and that will be changing in my new position. But definitely look me up. I think I'm C Darling K on Instagram. Drop my Instagram handle. I'm not hard to find.
Yeah. Easy to find. And then, you know, if you can't find by searching, you can just go to my Instagram page and we follow each other. So
yeah,
you can find her through me if you really need to go that route. So I always wrap up each of my shows by asking like a lightning round of sorts, by asking the same set of questions to all of my guests. So we'll start with, what do you think is the most pressing environmental challenge that we are facing?
So obviously, like, quick answer, climate change, duh. Other answer is, I really feel like any threat to the democratic process is an issue for our environment. So, you know, a lot of times folks in communities are really outspoken about what they want. And that doesn't always lead to change at the higher levels of our government. And I really think that needs to happen for us to have a healthy environment.
And what are you energized about moving forward?
Oh, I am energized about stuff like this, about talking with other people who like to geek out on nature stuff and are also pumped to have a better future for all of us. So anytime I can connect with new people that share this passion of trying to improve things, I love that. It energizes me.
Yeah, me too. And this last one's like a two-parter that you can approach however you feel most comfortable. What is the best advice you've ever been given, and or what advice do you have for our listeners?
Oh, okay. So I'm going to say two things. One, I just watched this thing by Amy Poehler, and she said that not trying to be cool is like the way in life. And so we already talked about that. So that's number one. And then I'm going to do a very uncool thing, which is to like wear the band shirt to the band that you're going to, right? Like the concert that you're going to. It's very uncool, but I'm going to do it. Some of the best advice and what I would want all the listeners to hear is some that you and the Healthy Ocean Coalition gave to me, which was to use your voice and your identity in whatever that means to you. So whether it's as a mother, whether it's as a scientist, whether it's just as a person who loves to walk around in nature or go in cold water or not go in cold water, to use your voice in that way, and that it is powerful and impactful, and someone out there will resonate with your message and also want to do that thing. So you don't have to have, you know, letters behind your name or some fancy title, but, you know, however you want to show up is valuable in this work. So I just throwing that back to you. Thank you for that advice.
Yes. I mean, that's what it's all about. And I feel like you summarized it so perfectly, like, and it goes hand in hand with the first bit, like, stop trying to be like what you think the world wants you to be, I guess, like, or what your vision of cool is. Like, everybody already has all the tools they need in just being themselves. And
absolutely,
it's just really leaning into that, owning it, and making those connections between who you are and the systems in which we live in.
Totally. I love it.
Well, Casey, I'm definitely going to have you back on, because I feel like we have so much more that we can talk about, and I'm definitely going to want to dive into your new role after you've been there for a little bit. So be awaiting another invitation in the future. But for now, I appreciate you so much for coming onto the show. I just adore you and love working with you. And I'm so glad that our paths have crossed in this work and we're now in it together. So thank you so much for joining me today.
Oh, thank you, Jenna. Likewise, to all of those sentiments, I feel the same way. I love that this, that the universe brought us together, and I can't wait to come back on. I love chatting with you.
Yay. And also, I'd like to thank the listeners. If you like this show and want to hear more of it or others like it, we are the American Shoreline Podcast Network. Wherever you listen to podcasts, you can also find us on social media. If you enjoy, perusing the internet, we are at Coastal News 365 on Twitter and Instagram, and we are the American Shoreline Podcast Network on Facebook. And you can connect with me personally at Jenna Valente on Instagram. So please find us online and let's chat about our beautiful coastline.